Yes.
Chaka 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 chaka
chaka. In the show number 30 of Casco Bell, we provided a brief history of the first Afro-German feminist movement, ADIFRA, Afro-Deutsche Frauen, and the ISD, Initiative Schwarze Menschen in Deutschland, the Initiative of Black People in Germany. For the show 36, a member of Casco Bell went to Berlin in May to meet the co-founder of the ISD, Katharina Oguntoye. The interview took place on the new premises of her association called Joliba, J-O-L-I-B-A. On the other hand, Ekpe Nguyeni has been an active member of ADIFRA for 10 years now. She invited us to her place. This is the opportunity for us all to listen to their testimonies, and among other things, they tell how black women set off Afro-German feminist movement, then move on to discuss their place in the black community and the visibility of black struggles in the white German society. Around 1985-1986, black women convened in different cities, Munich, Berlin, Bremen and Utrecht. Among them were Katja Kinder, Eva von Pierche, Yasmin Eding, Christina and Dominika Rockte, and Elke Jonk. These meetings prompted the creation of the ADIFRA, the first Afro-German lesbian feminist movement. We start the show with the interview of Ekpe Nguyeni, who's been a militant in ADIFRA since 1993.
Yeah, my name is Ekpe Nguyeni, and yes, I'm a black German. I'm a black woman lesbian. I've been living in Berlin for almost 20 years now, and I came in contact with ADIFRA in 1993.
Okay.
So I was kind of belonged to the middle generation. The founding members like Katja Kinder, or Yasmin Eding, or Eva von Pirch, and many others, they started ADIFRA in the mid-80s. That was the, that was a very moving time. Lots of things were happening. Also, the ISD was founded around that time, and I think lots of sort of the consciousness was kind of raised in that era. And that's also the time Audre Lorde came to Germany and was traveling. So about me, yes, I'm a translator, and I work freelance translating, and also as a proofreader, and I teach German as a foreign language for migrant groups. In some contexts, I would say I'm a black German because it might be important to stress that I'm also German, and that I, to stress this right to be here. Being German distinguishes me so much, you know. Being German, having a white German mother, means that I grew up with this culture. Yeah, that does influence me a lot. Yeah, but. I just don't, sometimes I don't feel so at ease having to, you know, prove to white Germans that I have a right to be here. And I feel sort of, I'm buying into that game. I don't really want to be part of that game even, you know. I'm just here, period. And nobody has a right to ask me where I come from, why I'm here, who my parents are, and all of that, you know. It's actually a discussion I don't really want to have, yeah. But sometimes, I'm also, I'm weak in a moment, and then I say, but I'm Afro-German or I'm black German, and, you know, and even explain why or something, Although I really don't want to do that anymore. I feel, no, it's counterproductive. Concerning the name of Adefra, I want to explain that originally it meant like Afro-German women, Afro-Deutsche Frauen, and the women that thought that decided on that name in the beginning, they were thinking maybe we should call it Afro-German lesbians because actually the group was constituted only of lesbians, but that would have meant the group would have been called Adele, and somehow that didn't sound right. it just didn't have a good sound. So that's why the decision came up to say Adefra. And also, yeah, so that women that were heterosexual or other sexualities could feel comfortable maybe in the group. And till today, all the women that are really active are lesbians or bisexual or, you know, I would just say LGBT. So that's a very important aspect of Adefra, that this, call it sexual orientation, sexual identity, it's just, we take it for granted by now, but that's who we are. And within the wider community, I think that is accepted and respected, that is the case. I think, yeah, being LGBT or being lesbian, being a strong women-centered organization has also made some people fear Adefra, I think, as, you know, those dangerous women, sort of. But overall, I think Adefra is often regarded as a really important resource in the black community, that people feel, okay, you know, if you want a strong backing, if you want a strong voice, if you want experience in difficult situations and conflicts, then you have to ask the Adefra women. Yeah. I mean, we're not all the same in that, especially the activists that have a lot of experience in giving workshops and doing transformation work. I have to say that that's Katja Kinder and Maisha Eggers that do that a lot. They are often asked to help with certain conflicts and in mediation situations, and the LGBT aspect is really important within Adefra, and all the events we do, we would give space to that aspect, or make it clear it's a LGBT friendly space that we create, and discrimination in any respect regarding sexual orientation, identity, whatever, would not be tolerated.
There is a board at the Adefra. How does it work?
Yeah, there's a board, yes, a group of women who are officially registered as the board, but I must say that is only on an official level, so that Adefra has a structure. I don't know if it's the same in France or other places, that you are entitled to money from the government if you have a certain form of association. Yeah? And that's why Adefra has that.
Okay.
And it's called, in German, it's called Eingetragener Verein, e.V., and it just means if you get donations or money from the state or some kind of grants, then you use it for the common good somehow. Yeah.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. So the board member thing is more of an official structure, but apart from that, it's just a group of activist women working together. Some of them board members, some of them not, and I think over the years, the structures have changed. I mean, we're over 25 years now that ADEFA exists. Like, we're in our 27th year or so. And I think, yeah, the beginning was really grassroots, yeah, meetings that took place in Munich and Berlin a lot. The women traveled to other European countries, to Amsterdam a lot, to Utrecht. There were connections there. Then the wall came down in the 90s. There was this connection with black women in former Eastern Germany. And that was really an important step, yeah. Getting to know each other and exchanging stories, really. Beginning time was a lot about finding an identity and exchanging experiences, yeah, and finding each other in that, yeah. I want to say that the structure changed from maybe more this... I want to say that we've become more virtual, sort of. I think in the early years and up until the beginning of the 2000s, there were more regular meetings, and there was more actual face-to-face. And I think that has changed. Mm-hmm. But it's become more of a network, actually, on the virtual level, like in mailing lists or platforms on the internet. But also that we now know, okay, who is engaged in what area, yeah? I think, yeah, many of the ADEFA women have developed all kinds of expertises in different areas, mm-hmm. be they academic, there's lots of really profiled, high-profile academics, then in the health sector, in the education sector, that's also very strong, and you would say those three areas are really strong, and all of them sort of with the basis of political activism, yeah, that is always part of people's work and activities, yeah, that there's every one of us brings in their activism into their everyday life, into their work, into what they do. I mean, black people have been here for centuries,
yes.
Definitely. That is something that is not known to the public very much, yeah. It is not very conscious because many people in Germany are not conscious of the fact that Germany was a colonial power, that they had colonies, and not such a short time. People always feel like, oh, that we just had these few colonies and only for a very short time, so it doesn't count. Yeah, that's sort of the general opinion. And I would say it's just not very conscious, but it's there. And if you look at Hicks history books and... if you look at the histories of the of the noble houses of certain of the kings and queens and all of that, there were always black people there too. Yeah, there was this Queen Charlotte, Königin Charlotte. Don't know her complete name. But definitely she was of African descent.
Mecklenburg mentions the Queen Sophie Charlotte of Mecklenburg-Strelitz. She was born in 1744 and died in November 1818. She was directly descended from Margarita de Castro y Souza, a black woman who belonged to the Portuguese royal house.
And yeah, there's this history of black people from the African continent being brought here to serve, yeah, which I would say is just a different form of slavery, really. Mm-hmm. But we in Germany there wasn't this big slavery activity bringing black people here, yeah. But of course Germans were involved in bringing black people to other places, deporting them to other places. And so, yeah, Germans were involved in the slave trade, definitely. And yes, and then you have the history, I mean, that was the really long-term history. Then you have the more recent history, beginning of the 20th century, there were quite large groups of people of African descent living in different cities. Here in Berlin, they were really well known for in the entertainment business. Mm. I mean, as part of this whole movement of black people, also from the United States, but also from the African continent, coming to Europe to work, to live, to do their art, you know, thinking of Josephine Baker and these, that crowd, yeah. There were also people that came here. And in the 30s, before the Nazis took over, I think Berlin was a very open and multicultural city, actually. And there was a very vibrant arts and music scene, and black people were very much part of this. Of course, then the Nazis came and all of that was destroyed. There's the history of black people being forcibly sterilized, being put into camps, concentration camps and other work camps. They were maybe not persecuted as clearly as the Jewish, but they were also persecuted. They were not regarded as so-called Aryans, so of course they were not liked. Some found a way of surviving by working in the circus, by working in films. There were these propaganda films mm-hmm. that the Nazis made, and they used a lot of black young people, children also, but also adults, to represent Africans, that kind of thing. And then there were some that also were shown in, you know, there's this tradition of exhibiting people in zoos. Mm-hmm. And so some black people also ended up there. And I would say, yeah, as a strategy of survival. And yeah, then the war came. Not that many black people that had been here in the 30s survived. And then black people from France, from the Allies, the soldiers from France and from the US mainly, also probably black British also, soldiers had relationships with white German women. A new generation of children came out of that. They were born after the war. And yeah, there's that big history of them, how they were discriminated against, how there was discussion in Parliament that they should be brought to another place because the climate in Germany wasn't right for them, mm-hmm. that kind of argument.
Will Schelling, who was a member of the Christian Democrat Party, said during a debate at the German Parliament, the climate of the country prevents them from adjusting to their environment. We were asking ourselves whether it is more relevant to send them back to the country of their fathers to secure their well-being.
Then there were special children's homes where also black children were taken to. They were taken away from their mothers very often. Some also grew up with their mothers, but many grew up in children's homes. So that's the generation of people, black people, that are now in this. And then later on you have lots of African students that came in the 60s to study in Germany. Again, they had relationships with local women, and that's the generation I come from. Mm-hmm. In East Germany, it was also students, but also people that had come to Germany as contract workers. That was from Mozambique and Angola. They were connected to East Germany strongly, and they received some kind of education in the, or they did like, a 3-year, they learned a craft in East Germany, and then they were sent back to their home countries. So yeah, that's another generation of black Germans that resulted from those connections. So that I would say that's the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. And with the 80s, 90s, I would say there was a stronger influx of migration of black people because of political reasons, mm-hmm. seeking asylum. They also settled. I mean, there's always this idea that migration is something that goes back and forth, that people come, but that they leave again. That's maybe it's a very German concept, because mm-hmm. people here feel we are not a migration country. Germany is actually supposed to be white. Mm-hmm. And there's this mixing kind of thing wasn't really supposed to happen. It was something like a mistake. There was never this idea that they would actually stay. Yeah. There's this quote, I don't know who said it, maybe it was Erich Fried, I'm not sure. He said, they wanted workers, but people came. Okay. Yeah. And people change their mind. They make different decisions. They have children that are suddenly growing up here in Germany, and they don't want to go back anywhere. They feel, this is where I live now, and this is my home. You know, I mean, this is probably the same in every country in Europe. The same story. Yeah, the consciousness had to come into being, had to develop, and if you're living in a country where you are, as a black person, are regarded as not belonging, or as actually you're on your way out again, you know, you're just visiting, yeah. I think that also contributed to it taking some time for black people to actually assume this consciousness, and also to be more to have more can't think of the English word right now. To be clearer about just that this is our place, and that we're not leaving, you know.
Stop. the wind blows, I open my mouth, I just let them go. And even though I am held in song, the voice above, even though I can't see far, I hold on tighter and close the star. I hold on tighter.
With different other groups. In the year 2001, there was a key event that brought different communities together again, and that was the death of Marianne Sarr. She was murdered by the police. She was shot. Actually, it was a family dispute. Police came in, and they say she took a knife, and they shot her. And that sort of brought outraged the black community, and people felt we have to unite on a different level. And we went to demonstrate in the city where that happened. And then we had several meetings called black community conferences, mm-hmm. where people from all different areas of the black community came together. And that was the first time there was a stronger connection also with the refugee movement. And again, there, what was necessary in the beginning was exchange. Mm-hmm. Find out about each other, tell each other the stories. Yeah, who are you, who are we, you know, what can we do together? Mm-hmm. So that went on for a few years. And from that, I would say, developed this idea that we have to connect on the virtual level, and we had these mailing lists and platforms arose, and there were lots of demonstrations in that time.
Do you think that black people and their struggles are visible in Germany?
It is clearer also in public that there is something like a black community or a black voice, mm-hmm. and there will be regular calls for from the media, we need someone from the black community to say something to this, so again and again there are discussions where the voice of the black community is heard, or people want to ask the black community, are looking for activists who will say something about mm-hmm. something, although if there's nothing special going on, there's a tendency that black voices can be forgotten again. Mm-hmm. So we sort of have to make ourselves heard also. Recently there was this big discussion about racist language in children's books. Mm-hmm. And that was another issue where, again, black activists were asked to come and speak on TV, on the radio, in the media about this. What do they think? What is their opinion? Is it really possible that if you look at old children's books, historical children's books like Pippi Longstocking, can you really change that? Can you change the language? Because, of course, they have the word in German, it's Neger, the N-word in it, and also racist concepts, yeah? Pippi Longstocking's father supposedly is the chieftain of the people in Takatuka land or something, which, of course, the association is clear what is meant by that. Yeah, and at that point, you don't only have to change the language, you would have to change the whole book, actually, the whole story, really. And there's this big discussion here, and especially people from the literary world were appalled. They felt that, no, these are our beloved children's books. You can't change them, you know. Whereas, children that grow up now, black children, they don't want to read that kind of a book where they are being portrayed as something that is bad or that they're discriminated against. Yeah. So, that discussion is still going on. And, of course, activists from Adeva are also involved in that and speaking to that. Mm-hmm. For example, another important name is Maisha Eggers. She's one of the most outspoken voices from Adeva, and she's a professor for the science, children's sciences, mm-hmm. and she's specialized on gender, and she's often invited to these panels and has transported the Adeva opinion into the public very often. So that's how I would describe Adeva's activism at the moment, that different activists are involved in all kinds of things, mm-hmm. All kinds of events, and we punctually, that's German, we from time to time we come together in the real world, kind of, which is really called then an Adeva meeting. Like in 2011, when we had our 25th anniversary, we came together in a house. We had like 20, 30 women there, mm-hmm. and we did workshops and reflection, and it was called Wellness and Resistance. Just a way to sort of give each other a space where we can be well, and also to realize that being well is an act of resistance. That is a concept that was strongly brought in by bell hooks. And Katja Kinder and Maisha Eggers were also, again, the people that did several workshops surrounding this concept. And I would say that is something that strongly influences Adeva's work at the moment, that we've come there over the years, that being well ourselves and taking care of each other and taking care of ourselves, that is really an important part of being black activists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas maybe in the past, being out on the outside, working on the outside a lot, and maybe also, you know, doing work that involved convincing the public or teaching or explaining racism to white people, I think we've sort of moved on from that. We don't engage in that much anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. there are always moments where you do that, or where you have to do it because in order to move forward, in a certain situation, but it's not really an area where Adeva invests energy. It's more about, how can we be well, how can our children be well, how can our relationships among each other be well and constructive.
Okay. Do you want to add something?
Like last words or something. I just feel Adeva was very important for me personally. It helped my personal development a lot, and my survival, I would say. And I think it's true to say that goes for many black women that are in contact or in connection with Adeva, and I feel I owe a lot to Adeva and the women that started it. Yeah.
Der Wecker klingelt, Nacht vorbei, raus aus warm Gemach, Geld muss rein. Nicht grad stressfrei, keine Zeit mehr bleibt, all die Zeit ergreift. No money, no life, no funnies bricht ein, drehst dich im Kreis, der Sog so hoch, zieht mit rein. Handelst nu Schulden, wandelst bloß für Schein, Wechselpferd, es darf nicht sein. Ist hart wie Beton in Straßen, die Mile, da Zwang, mein zu klimm, sofort begleich. Kein Spaß, Kredit, lass es sein, brauchst kein, bis das rein. Reicht. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Regel, eine Bestimmung muss so, sonst gegebenenfalls folgt Straf aus Normordnung, die Formsatzung. Besser hab Angst vor ihrer Neigung zur Maßbeschneidung, trägt sie bei, fordert Leistung, setzt sich ein für den Schein. Regel Nummer eins, die das Leben des Menschen umfasst, Üblichkeit, jeder sein eigenes hat. Mancher mehr ist gar reich, hat's nicht schwer, nimmt's leicht. Der andere, der nix hat, weint, der kämpft um vielleicht ein Bruchteil. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nix, wegschiebst Probleme, behebst du nicht. Kann versteh, bleib dran, geh tief im Grund. Seh sie die Ursache, den Punkt warum. Ein Fädel vom Herr der Macht umschwört bedacht, verwirrt den ohne Acht, schlägt wie im Schachmatt, blendet vor Augen, manipuliert sich das, was sehen sollst. Regel Nummer eins, uns allumfassend verfehlen Arbeit, um nicht arm zu sein. So ein Quatsch, doch eine Regel der Stadt, Weltkapitalismus schlägt zu mit aller Kraft. Kraft sieh zu, dass du dein Scheiß geregelt kriegst. Ne Flucht hilft nichts.
For the second part of the show, we focus on the ISD with the interview of Katharina Uguntoye. In the mid-80s, Audre Lorde encouraged black women to tell their stories, which resulted in the writing of the first book by an Afro-German woman entitled Farbe Bekennen, Showing Our Colors. It was published by Katharina Uguntoye, May Ayim and Dagmar Schultz in 1986. The book is a collection of testimonies by black women on their experience of racism and sexism in Germany, with text and essays on the history and culture of Afro-Germans. Katharina Uguntoye and Lee Ayim eventually founded the ISD in 1985 with black men and black women joining the group since then.
My name is Katharina Uguntoye. I'm a Nigerian German. We say Afro-German or Black German here. I mean, I felt like a German. And then I was in Nigeria as a kid when I was 7 years old to nine, till I was nine. And I knew that I have cousins who are Czech, Nigerian Czech, and I had cousins who were British Nigerian. So I felt, oh yeah, I'm Afro European. The term didn't exist then, but I had that in my family, and I thought that would be very suitable, because also it's very German, because the Germans have this fantasy of the world getting better if we had a nice, strong Europe.
Okay.
I mean, at the moment we see that this is difficult too, but I think for the diaspora this is true, that we have Afro-European experience, which is diverse too. So, I mean, I think the main thing you have to learn, and also I try to pass on to the young people, it's very important that we have the name Afro-German and Black German, because it's a name you can introduce yourself with. you know. If my name is stupid, you know, and I have to introduce myself, that's bad. Mm-hmm. And that's what was these all these terms that were put on us, like mixed or half caste and Besatzungskinder, wie heißt das auf English? Like for after the war, they called war babies, they were called.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is not a name you want to introduce yourself mm-hmm. with. So Afro-German and Black German are names to introduce ourselves to a community, to the world. And that was, yeah, very important.
How do you define yourself?
My definition is I did not want to be a professional Ausland, foreigner. I mean, you could say, you know, this is a big part of my life, this work I do, but it's not that I have to do this work to be, yeah? I am Katharina, and I have, you know, fun, I have friends, I like doing my work, you see, and this is important that you are yourself, and that you have a family and you have friends, you have a good life. It's not only about survival, because of course this is all survival. Maybe for every human, but for us as Black people, it is of course about survival. And survival means to live good to me. This is my message, that just to live and be unhappy all the time would not be very satisfying to me. This is many Black Germans go into this trap because this is something that's offered to you, that you are the victim.
Yeah,
you poor little thing. Yeah, I mean, who are you calling poor little thing? Yeah, this is a part of my survival to say I am and I have my life and I do as much as I can, and yeah, that's good.
How did you create the ISD and how does it work?
I took part in creating the first book on Black people in Germany called Farbe bekennen, Showing Your Colors. Like that was, I was 25 at that time. The book came, we started working on the book in 1884, and in 86 the book came out. When Audre Lorde came here and her publisher said, we want to do another book with you? She said, I don't need another book. That was her to say, no, I would be much more interested to do something with the Black women here in Germany. Yeah. And that was the beginning of Farbe bekennen, of Showing Our Colors. Mm-hmm. And she in the end only did a pre-word and just left the place for us to show. But she was part of creating this book. Mm-hmm. And therefore, from the book came the movement, and in that process, we connected with other people, people talked to each other, and we started having meetings, which then became to be the ISD, the Initiative of Black People in Germany. When we did Farbe bekennen, the book, we started having readings, yeah, and we it showed that everyone could read from the book because it was, it's not about the individual people in the book, but it's about the experience of Black people, mm-hmm. which is the experience of being very isolated. Even today, when there's many more Black people here, people still live in little places and have no family or other Black people around them. I grew up in Heidelberg, and there was maybe two or three people in the whole town, although there was a lot of tourists and soldiers. Anyway, so we did these readings, and then we had ISD, and in the ISD meetings, we said that we would not be called with the N-word. Nobody could name us that, because it was discussed. Who are we? It was about finding out what is your place here in this place, in this country. We then said that Afro-German and Black German is referring to being socialized, mm-hmm. raised in this country. Okay. And so we have learned being Germans. But some people didn't feel so well being German, but I think the moment you say you're Black German or Afro German, it also refers to that experience, may it be good or not so good. That was like a common decision, mm-hmm. and therefore in the group was mostly Black Germans, but also it could be that some of them had both parents from Africa, but that was not such a big group at that time. Mm-hmm. Now in the last 5 years we have many more people where Black parents are here and having Black kids, mm-hmm. but at that time it was more mixed marriages. So this is a color will be a bit of an issue. It was always an issue in ISD too, mm-hmm. but it wasn't so strong before, but I think, you know, we will handle that because it's there. That's how our families are. Yeah. Yes, like one friend, she also is in Adefra, and she her color is white, yeah, her skin color, but people from the US would immediately identify her as Black because of her features.
Yeah.
But Germans are not used to that, so they would not see it. White Germans wouldn't see it at all, mm-hmm. but even Black people in the ISD would then ask, oh, what are you doing here? Okay. And that was painful for her, mm-hmm. because, right from the beginning we had some Indian people, some Tamil people, East Asian, and I think there was one Arab woman who said that they identified with the cause, and they said, I feel like a Black German. Yeah, I mean, Black was referring to people who didn't feel that they were directly African or they were more African American, but also these people would feel well about having this political term Black German. But that was a minority, you have to say, because other people would say, no, I'm Turkish or Arab or whatever, and they wouldn't identify with the political cause at that time. That came later. Mm-hmm. So ISD was mostly Afro-Germans, and then we also, they were dear friends, we all created together, like Sheila Mazurka, she's now a journalist with Deutsche Welle. She was a founding member, Daniel Alagiavana, and I forget who the other names at the moment. But you see, they were there, and they were part of the movement here. Yeah.
Okay, I see. How would you define the history of Black in Germany?
It's very interesting to see that even at the turn, around 200, 300 BC, you have Black people here coming with the Roman army or with trade from Arab countries or Far East and so on. Anyway, so there's always been a Black presence in Europe, also in Germany, but not very visible. But then somebody made a research from the 1500s and 1600s, and she did just a little group in a South German part, and she found already like 200 people, right? In the, where the baptizing, in the churches, they write down who was born and who was, who died, and in that documents you can find people. And there was like when slave trade happened, when the Europeans went out to find, you know, look into the world, and they also brought black people here. Mm-hmm. At some time it got fashionable to have black people at your court, and in the, they were indentured laborers or even slaves, mm-hmm. also in Germany. But if you, it, most people who weren't royals were not free at that time, so it wasn't such a difference, mm-hmm. sometimes. And if you worked in the court, and you get payment, then it's a normal job,
okay.
in the frame of that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's, we find several people who were okay, doing okay. Like we have the first report of an Afro-German woman. But then, of course, there's people who maybe be in worse situation. If you don't have a patron who is taking care of you, mm-hmm. then it was, would be very hard. Okay. Like Wilhelm Amo, there's a research on him. Yes, yeah. Like he was, had a patronage. He was adopted by the Wolfenbüttels, and so he got an education.
Anton Wilhelm Amo was born in Ghana in 1703. It's likely that he died in 1753. When he was 4, he was abducted by the Dutch West Indies Company, who brought him to Amsterdam. He was adopted by Anton Ulrich, Duke of Brunswick-Wolfenbüttel. He studied and wrote a thesis on the rights of black people in Europe. In 1747, he went back to Ghana, but his origins and ideas gave rise to much hostility towards him.
You know, there's this mixed bag, and I think till today we have the mixed bag. We have people who have normal lives with a nice family or supportive families, and then you have people who have to fight their way alone. There's some people in the show business who have written their biographies now, mm-hmm. that they've done well for themselves, but they had it very hard in their childhood. Mm-hmm. And then you have a lot of people who have had bad experience in their family situation, and I think that's always very hard if you are young, if you're a kid, mm-hmm. and you're not supported by your family, then it's very, very hard to become an independent, you know, self-assured person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened a bit to my colleague,
yes.
my Ian, who wrote the book with me, mm-hmm. because she was in a foster home family that wasn't supportive. I mean, the father was, but the mother and the grandmother were very nasty mm-hmm. most of the time, and that destroyed her self-esteem. So anyway, and that happens to a lot of people. So we have to tell the stories from all these angles, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that black people are visible in Germany?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I think in the last 2 or 3 years, there is more of an, people in Germany get more aware of black people mm-hmm. as being just normal people. I think that that was something that was missing in the education mm-hmm. here, to not stigmatize, not exoticize people. To really be post-colonial, they still were learning images that were colonial images all along, and now I think it's still in a process to unlearn that mm-hmm. and to really accept your fellow Germans who are black, and also to accept Africans who come from Africa.
Did you develop cooperation with other groups?
At some point in the beginning, there was exchange happening. Some young fellows who did parties. Yeah, hip-hop, I think, was the at that time. And they always did meetings with the Turkish and the Arab kids. Mm-hmm. They did emphasize on that. Otherwise, I think the community here in itself is very diverse, the black community. You have, for example, the African-European experience, mm-hmm. which are different. You know, if you're from France, if you're from Portugal, if you're from England, mm-hmm. You have always a different history, right?
Definitely.
Let alone from Norwegian or Sweden. We are all there. And then Caribbean, Black Caribbean is our own experience. Then Africa, of course, mm-hmm. Africa West. East, South, North, and then you have African Americans who have their own history. And so we are all together, the diaspora, and we have to always work with the differences among each other, ourselves. Like a big thing and a big splitting part here is language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I unfortunately don't speak French. I mean, I understand a tiny little bit. Yeah, and or Italian, and so you have the Francophone community, you have the Anglophone, and the Portuguese speaking community, and it's getting a bit better. And we have done work together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Black History Month was done. Sometimes among different groups. But you see, if you do something and it doesn't include translation, then people with French will not come.
You have created your own association, Djeliba. Could you tell me more about it?
Djeliba is my, after I worked for 10 years with ISD, I felt that ISD was doing very important work on the discrimination level, mm-hmm. And identity work, but I wanted to create institutions, and I couldn't do that in the group, so I went to form with other colleagues a group, and mm-hmm. There was a white woman who was a mother of had an Afro-German family, mm-hmm. A husband and kid, and then there was a black Brazilian and myself, and we three founded this association, Joliba, and it meant Joliba we chose because it's the name of the Niger River,
Okay. And
it means big stream, big river. And our image is that the forces that come together, people bring in their energy to create intercultural projects. Yeah, so my main thing was like the Brazilian, Ari Andrade, he's a child therapist.
Okay.
And what I saw, I mean, I'm a historian, so I can't really do social work, but I found it very important that there, how could you deal with the pain, and you really need professionals to help if somebody has questions or has trouble, and that therefore I put a lot of energy into creating this project that mm-hmm. would offer social professional help for kids and the families. And so this is one of the main things, thing we do in Joliba. The other thing is to create also this atmosphere I talked about, a positive atmosphere with nice places to be in, that you'd like to be in, that are, we have like children parties that are very child focused so that they can feel welcome, welcome in this world, and they see other black kids, so to get out of this experience, I'm alone, nobody understands me. But if they know there's other peers, it's different. You can look for understanding in your peers or in other adults who know your situation. So this was important for me to offer something for the kids on the cultural level. And then the next step would be to educate adults, meaning the white society, the intercultural society here in Germany, in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And therefore we do a lot of cultural work addressing this, like educating about black culture, about politics, history and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, we do like Black History Month in one day. Every February, because we're very small, so we say we can't do a whole month, we can't handle that, but we do it, so we do it, and it's a very nice event every year for 8 years now.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good.
Do you want to add something?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this exchange on an Afro-European level, you know. I think it started, there's one, I heard about one women's group that is doing some of that. Sometimes at the there's always a Bundestreffen, the federal meeting, every year. And there's people from Switzerland and from Austria.
Okay.
Yeah, they come too, because they're all German tongue. Although, you know, you can't understand perfectly. Anyway, so it would be really interesting to have more interaction, you know, getting to meet each other. And
we want to thank Ekpe Nongani and Katharina Oguntoye for their warm welcome. For more information, you can visit the website of the ADEFRA at www.adefra.com, www.adefra.com, and you can go to the ISD's website at neue.isdonline.de, neu.isdonline.de. In the show, you've listened to Andrea Triana, Draw the Stars, Fleur Earth. The track is Regeln. Juanita Ellis, Make a Joyful Noise, Musina with Go Again, and ESG Step Off. See you soon on Cas Rebelle.
Thank you.